Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms to Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms of preteens, teens, and young adults. My mission is to first and foremost support and encourage you, mom, so that you can live well and reclaim your life. Two, this show will help you have the best possible relationships with your teens so that you can communicate, motivate, and guide them effectively and actually enjoy them. And third, I will bring you top-notch guests who will share the newest in adolescent research and trends so you can be prepared and aware of what your teens are facing today. Always, you will leave each episode armed with practical parenting tips. Welcome back, everyone, to the 259th episode of Power Your Parenting, Moms with Teens podcast. I'm Colleen O'Grady, the host of the show. In this episode, we look at some of the current trends in technology worldwide and what parents can do about it. We also discuss how parents can have important and open conversations with their teens to keep them protected with all technology. Horace Bronson is a co-founder and on the board at Digital Detox, where he leads global initiatives for digital wellness and helped grow the company to a customer base in over 80 countries and is the CEO at CampLight, helping parents take a practical approach to navigating raising kids with tech. As a father of two children, Horace has a deep passion for improving the relationship society has with technology. Welcome, Horace.
Colleen, thanks for having me.
So you are a co-founder of Digital Detox and the CEO of CampLight. So why did you decide to focus on this? How did you get into this?
Yeah, so Digital Detox has a really beautiful story. My dear friend Levi started the company back in 2012. And we were friends in middle school and high school. And you know, this was before phones and social media. So we had it pretty easy navigating those times. And at the time, I was starting another company and was an early supporter of Digital Detox. And DD started as this very immersive, experiential company, summer camps for adults, Digital Detox retreats. And that fundamentally, going on some of those, fundamentally changed how I view the world and how I think about my own tech habits. Unfortunately, Levi died of a brain tumor in 2017 at the age of 32. He was just at the top of his game. He had a major book deal. The brand was spreading around the world. He was building this movement. You know, keep in mind, this was 2012 when he launched this. This is before TikTok and Instagram as we know it. So he was a complete visionary.
Wow.
So I had the opportunity to take over the company in 2020. And, you know, 40 days before COVID, we relaunched events around the world and had sold out experiences. And then COVID shut us down. So we've been focused the last several years on research. I travel the world to understand how technology impacts all of our lives. We work with hundreds of schools around the world. And all of that ultimately led to, you know, it's interesting because technology impacts every person on the planet. In our opinion, and all our research led to, it impacts parents and teens in particular the most. And so we wanted to double down on that. And I think it's the parenting challenge of our generation. I have two kids in fourth and first grade. It's something that's top of mind in my community. It's top of mind at all ages. And so with CampLight, we wanted to create a community and an infrastructure for parents to navigate this uncharted territory. We haven't had a generation that's gone through this from a parenting perspective. And so there's no playbook and there's a lot of nuances. There's a lot of bad information out there. And so we wanted to put together just some of the top digital wellness experts, some of the top mental health professionals around the world that are studying this. So we could tell our community what we know, what we don't know, and folks could start making decisions that are really good for their family. So I'm very passionate as a parent, as a digital wellness person in the space. You know, I think we need to do more work to improve not only for ourselves, but for our kids, and wanted to put something together that could really help parents and add value to how they navigate this crazy time.
What are some of the trends worldwide?
Well, that's broad in terms of teens or adults or anything.
With adults and teens.
So, and to set context, Digital Detox launched the DORA score about a year ago, and it's an assessment that, you know, there's a lot of personality quizzes and kind of tech addiction quizzes out there, but we wanted to assemble, you know, a thoughtful methodology to determining how tech is impacting lives. And so we developed this study. It's based on a score of 0 to 120. There's four different risk levels. And so far, we've had individuals in over 90 countries take the DORA score. And in the fall, we launched a student version of it, student DORA, that has to be administered through schools. And we have schools throughout the country starting to have their teenagers, middle school and up, take that. So we're able to get data from teens and individuals, not only on how tech is impacting their lives, but just their sentiments around it, and their sentiments around the family and parents in general. So it's interesting, like one major trend is sleep, right? And it's impacting all of us and teens in particular. Something like 90% of teens will scroll right before bed, and north of 25% are checking notifications in the middle of the night. And these are two of the worst things you can do for interrupting REM sleep. And that just has so many profound impacts on our physical and mental development. So that was a huge takeaway. And for adults in general, they're also interrupting sleep, but it's even more of an impact for teens.
So understand, like, in the middle of the night, like answering your phone and stuff, for just the moms listening. So what is bad about scrolling right before bed?
Well, yeah, a couple things. One, you know, just in general, we don't want to have technology in the bedroom. It throws off our circadian rhythms. The blue light interrupts our process of going to sleep. Depending on what you're looking at, this goes for adults too, anything more anxiety provoking, a frustrating email, something anxious on Netflix, that's going to interrupt how your brain starts to wind down and process going to sleep. Kids in particular, though, yeah, a lot of it's blue light, a lot of it's the anxious scrolling, but we want to start getting in and we want to start training our bodies and our minds that now's time for sleep. And when you're scrolling right before bed, that is a very not good thing to do in terms of telling your brain that we're winding down and we're starting to sleep. But it's also one of the easiest to kind of communicate and I think to come into alignment. There's going to be a lot of things that parents and teens disagree with, but this is one that we found, at least through our research, that it's a conversation that usually goes pretty well. Look, let's put all of our other disagreements aside on social media and access and screens. Let's agree that we're not going to scroll an hour before bed. And here are the reasons why. Where we found that hit home even more is if you have a student athlete, because there's full stop, no way that your child is going to reach their max athletic potential if they are interrupting their sleep. Now, they might become tremendous athletes. Who knows? Maybe they'll go pro, but they're not going to reach their max potential. And that's just categorical. So if you have a student that's an athlete, usually the student, once they learn the science behind it, they're much more on board. I want to maximize my potential as an athlete, whatever level I'm playing at. And sleep is one of the most critical.
That's very helpful.
I think an overall trend looking at adults is this feeling of distraction and avoidance. So something like 65% of adults pretend to check their phone to avoid talking to another adult, right? So there's no necessary reason for looking at the device, but they want to avoid some of these social interactions, which is wild. When we look at teens, an interesting takeaway is their sentiment is that parents have absolutely no idea what they're doing, right? They don't know what they're looking at in terms of content or influencers, and they don't know why they're looking at it. They don't understand what the draw is with some of these platforms. And so there's this definite sentiment that they're not understood. And that's not new. That's been going on since the beginning of time, teens feeling that their parents don't understand them, but it's a much more profound impact. Two other really interesting data points, and you might want to double click on these. One is that similar to that, where there's sort of this disconnect and sentiment with parents, most teens feel that their parents are hypocritical, where, you know, they're saying, look, we don't want you on the screen. We don't want you scrolling. You're spending too much time. But then they're just lounging on the couch all day looking at Facebook reels, not modeling the behavior that they want. And that's not good for a lot of reasons, but teens are raising their hand and saying, look, I'm noticing this. That's not fair that you're saying this and then showing this other behavior. But if we get to a more serious tone, it's pretty scary. It's something like over 70% of people that have taken student DORA, which is thousands, recognize that their mental health is impacted in one way or another. So they're raising their hand and saying, I don't like how I feel, but I don't know exactly how to stop and how to improve. So that's fascinating. That I think there's this opinion of parents that kids, for the most part, they love what they're doing, and they still do. They're still addicted, but more and more are starting to recognize that it's impacting them negatively and raising their hand to hopefully try to improve.
So what specifically in terms of what are they feeling that they don't want to feel?
They don't want to feel lonely. That we could get into bullying where they feel isolated. And I mean, bullying used to happen only on campus. Now it's in the loneliness of your room. They're feeling the fatigue of constantly scrolling for hours and hours a day. They don't want to feel that. They're feeling a lack of connection where, you know, before we've had so many students say, I used to be creative and out doing things and now I'm just living through my phone. They're feeling that they're not experiencing the world in real time, and they don't like that. Now, that said, that there some of these same students and many others love a lot of benefits that it gives them access to. They're able to learn about different cultures. They're able to meet someone that is outside of their home environment. And sometimes those could cause, you know, really great benefits. But many are recognizing the distraction, the loneliness, the impact on their grades. And they don't like how they feel. They also don't like the toxicity of some of the social platforms.
Do they mention anxiety or stress?
Sure. Yeah. And all that kind of falls under the mental health umbrella, right? So, you know, many are feeling more anxious, feeling more stressed. A lot of times they're feeling more stressed, I think, from the pressure of their parents. And some of that then ties into a lot of what they're doing on their phones and their devices. But yeah, anything under that umbrella, stress, anxiety, loneliness, depression, they're definitely feeling it.
So what do teens want their parents to know about their tech use?
That's a really smart question. And I think one thing is what they don't want their parents to do is be reactionary and alarmist when something comes up. And we talk a lot about this with our community, starting at a much younger age, of creating that safe space that your child can talk to you about anything without feeling that you're going to take something away. So I'll give you an example. There's a high school student and they experience something not good online. Let's say it's a deep fake news story that's violent. They go to their parent. Many parents will react and just be alarmed and take it away. You can't access this anymore because you shouldn't see this content. This content is bad for your brain. And maybe those arguments are true. But all that does is teach the child that they can't come to you and have a conversation about it out of fear of taking away their connection to all of their friends. So that's one of the biggest cornerstones of a lot of the feedback we have from teens is this lack of trust to talk to their parent about something that's concerning. And that's the last thing as a parent that you want them to talk about anything, whether it's bullying, whether it's something developmentally with their body, whether it's something they see, whether it's something that concerns them at school. You want to have that as at open arms. And the way to cut that off is to just immediately take away something because it happens to be the subject of something they're mentioning. So that's definitely a common theme.
Yeah. So I've been a marriage and family therapist for 30 years. And so I think a lot of times that it's easy just to see it like time on screens, you know, and not really know what that means. And I liked the book Behind Their Screens because it was a great book in terms of getting into the real social dynamics that teens go through online and all the social binds they feel, you know, like they have to click a like on their best friend's picture. And if not, you're not a loyal friend and things I never even thought about.
Yeah. And we see that trend as well. And I think where it kind of comes full picture is this feeling, it's almost keeping up with the Joneses, but it's FOMO. It's this fear of missing out where if they're not constantly on, they're going to miss a key update. They're going to miss some social fiber. And that terrifies them of kind of being out of loop. For a lot of parents though, that's a reason that they want to get their kids on social media earlier because they don't want their kid to not be in the social crowd. They don't want them to not have friends. And so we see younger and younger parents justifying giving access to social media because they want their kid to be popular. They don't want their kid to be ostracized from the friend community.
Yeah. So you say that asking what age someone should get a phone is not a great question.
Yeah. Bad questions. So it's the number one question that gets asked. And I know this is really difficult for parents to accept because in a perfect world, everyone will have a certain age and I could give you an answer. No one could give you an answer that it should be seventh grade or ninth grade or fourth grade or whatever it is. If they're trying to give you a finite answer, then this is just not good data. It's not good information, full stop. So here's why it's problematic is because there's so much more nuance that goes on. What's going on with the individual? What's the personality? What's the family dynamic? Are they meeting their extracurricular responsibilities and academic responsibilities? What do they want the phone for? What's the kind of community approach? What's the school's approach? There's so many more things that we want to ask. And I think, I don't want to use the word mistake, but I think one challenge that parents make, and you know, if we look at like the wait till eighth group, and I'm not against the wait till eighth group, I think they're doing some great things, but I think parents feel that then there's this, if they learn whatever that number is, ninth grade, 10th grade, sixth grade, then magically their kids are ready for, you know, full access to a phone. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I would much rather have a seventh grader that has access to a phone or social media or whatever it is with a lot of education and thoughtful conversation than a ninth or 10th grader that's just given it, you know, full stop or, you know, full access. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see time and time again, is parents will wait till this, you know, specific age, give them full access without any reins or conversation. And that's when the problems happen. So yeah, I can't give you an exact answer of what age it needs to be. It would really depend on the individual. What we try to do is get parents thinking about things in a different way and kind of asking some of those questions internally. And you know, the first question is, what do they want a phone for? You know, it's not necessarily that the phone is necessarily a bad device. It's, you know, a phone with a camera is very different than a phone with TikTok, social media, and all this other stuff. So there's just a lot more questions to ask around that. Same thing with social media, same thing with pretty much any other app that you could get access to.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the trends between, like, so for the teens who think that their online life is the real world and don't feel like a neat, I don't even know how to say this question. There's like the online world and then the not screen world. So I think, what trends are you seeing around that in terms of the tension between just being on the phone and having your social life on the phone versus doing social life in the real world? Do teens feel like they're being ripped off if they're not with a real life person, or do they feel like this is good? We can just do our relationship online.
So it's a smart question. It's complicated to answer because every community is going to be a little bit different. Like, we've looked at some sub communities and schools in Massachusetts, and they're going to perform slightly different and kind of think about the world differently than kids in Oregon, right? Overall, here's sort of the takeaway. One, they're feeling a lack of connection and they're recognizing that this isn't real connection. And I actually would want to do some things in person. That said, they don't want to give it up, right? And it is their source. And that's one thing that parents, I don't think, understand, is that this, like it or not, this is sort of their source and their outlet to stay connected to their ecosystem. And, you know, I think we project a lot as parents. Yes, of course, we would much rather them go out to dinner with friends and talk and have a conversation, but that's just not the world they live in. And so ask, you know, all the teens that I mentioned before that recognize some of the health impacts, ask them if they want to completely get rid of the social media. Most of them are going to say no, right? Now there's a flip phone movement that are trying to go very analog, but many, you know, they're not ready to give that up. I think it brings up a really interesting point from putting on the parent hat, and that's to be careful what we wish for. So I remember when I grew up, I had a landline, and I would talk for hours to friends or girlfriend or whoever it was. And I remember my parents complaining, oh my goodness, Forrest, like, why aren't you out doing stuff? You know, you're talking on the phone for hours on a weekend. Ask that same question now, and parents would give their left arm for their kids to have a conversation on the phone. And so I think we need to be careful what we wish for. And I'm not advocating for social media. I'm not saying that it's this positive. I'm just saying we don't know what's next. And maybe it's much worse than this. What I do know is that it is. And this is how kids are connecting and interacting. And if we could teach them some balance and teach them some of the benefits of having, you know, some of these in-person interactions, great, but we can't just pretend that it doesn't exist because that's just not real.
So what is the best way for a parent, specifically a mom, to talk to their teens about having balance?
Yeah. So a couple things. I think it depends on where their starting point is, right? So are they already wildly off balance and, you know, they're not meeting any of their other responsibilities, academic, interpersonal, extracurricular, athletic, whatever it is? That's very different than a child that is meeting all of those responsibilities and then is spending an extra hour here or there connecting with friends on social media. Completely different kids, right? Also, their personality is going to come into it. In terms of having that conversation, I think it's really talking about priorities and talking about, you know, how they want to spend their time. We only get a certain amount of hours in the day, in the year, in your life. And how do we want to balance that out? When we talk to schools, and I speak to schools around the country, when we kind of rephrase it and say, look, at the current pace you're going, you're going to be spending 20 years of your life on your device here, that usually wakes them up. And we don't have data on, you know, does that change their habits long term? But at least that talk track is really important. And many kids will recognize, wow, like, there's a lot of other things I could be doing. Here's the thing, though, is parents need to provide an alternative that is just as enticing. If we just say you should be spending less time on your phone, okay, great, what am I going to do now? And if there's nothing more fun or more interactive or engaging to do, why would I want to switch, right? Mm-hmm. And so parents need to put in the work to then create some of those opportunities. And it doesn't have to be elaborate, expensive opportunities, but creating, and it could be as simple as a party at the house or a sleepover or going out to concert or whatever it is. Create those opportunities that are exciting for them, and then kind of create those boundaries. I think the other important thing that moms can have the discussion with their teens is just setting those boundaries. And I think if you approach it from that perspective of a collaborative perspective and not an authoritarian perspective, that could go a long way. So instead of saying, Jimmy, you cannot be on your phone during these hours, have the conversation. Say, okay, like, what do you think would be reasonable? Let's negotiate here. And we want to have boundaries. We're having presence. We're you know, meeting these other responsibilities, and in exchange, then I think it's okay to you have, for you to have some screen time as well. I think if you have that dialogue and you align, that's going to earn a lot of trust.
I agree.
All right. So you say that cyberbullying has evolved. So in what ways?
Completely different. I mean, bullying in general has evolved. So, you know, if we think about bullying growing up pre-phone, right, there, it's a good chance a parent or an adult was going to witness it. You're going to be on campus. There's people around. Now you're alone in your bedroom at night and you could be viciously attacked. So just the dynamic of how you're being bullied. I think the second thing that's changed is, you know, before when we think of bullying, analog bullying, if you will, you know, it's a little bit more physical, maybe some name calling. And now we're seeing a trend of just very subtle paper cuts, right? It's being unfollowed. It's not being tagged in a photo. It's these small accumulation of paper cuts that then can do a lot of damage and could have a lot of lasting harm. So it's tricky business. And it's starting at a very young age. We're seeing it on Roblox with first graders, you know, anything where you have connection to someone else. And I think it's important for parents to kind of teach at a young age how to kind of interpret different communication. And this kind of comes back to the point earlier of giving full access to text or phone or whatever it is without the proper education. Most adults, for that matter, let alone kids, don't know how to interpret a text message, right? And so it could be internalized as bullying or hurtful or cold or short, but it's a text message. Like, you need to learn how to communicate via text. So that's just one example. But yeah, it's complicated. And, you know, I think in platforms like Snapchat and with a lot of the anonymous apps that could be attached to Snap, like, that's just created, you know, a wretched environment for kids to be really cruel. You know, YouTube's a huge factor in bullying. A lot of times you have just trolls there that are just being mean in general. But if you're a content creator, you know, kids are just getting viciously trashed. So it's changed in a lot of ways, just in terms of what we have access to, when and where you're getting bullied and how you're getting bullied. I think the other trend, and I don't want to make a blanket statement here, but I think schools just don't know how to deal with it. And many schools, they just want to wash their hands. They don't want to get involved. And depending on every state has kind of different laws, every school district might have different policy. Sometimes they're not following through on that, but it's very difficult as a parent to approach the school depending on the situation, because since a lot of it happens offline, the school will say, well, look, this happened on social media, it was off school, it's not our problem. But in the vast majority of cases of cyberbullying, it continues in person. It's not isolated to just social media. So it's this complicated gray area with, well, who's responsible for navigating this? And schools, in a lot of cases, are trying to wash their hands and not get involved.
Yeah, I've seen that. So what advice do you have for parents around that? Whose kid, who's gotten these paper cuts or?
Well, yeah, it's tricky with the paper cuts because sometimes you don't know, okay, was it just I forgot to get tagged in a photo? Sometimes it's hard to tell. And once you tell, it's been going on for months. So I would take a step back and again, try to create that safe space at a young age. So this is for moms and dads of much younger kids. Create that safe space where they could talk to you. You don't want to wait until 12th grade and then say, okay, well, this is a safe space for you to talk to me. You need to start and build that trust way earlier. If for whatever reason you haven't done that and this is all net new, then you need to have that open conversation and try to start building those trust building blocks that they could talk to you about anything without the feeling that you're going to completely react. I think another thing that's really complicated, and I can't tell you what the answer is, blanket statement, but when to approach the school or another parent. In some cases, that can make it worse. You're escalating the situation, but in some cases, it needs to be dealt with briskly. So it's so nuanced, and I'm sorry, I can't give you the silver bullet answer. It's just, it's very dependent on what the dynamic and what the situation is. What I can say is we find that the parents that are succeeding the most are the ones that can have that open dialogue with their child, can have cordial conversation with other people in the community, and the communities that are kind of more in lockstep on, you know, how are we going to navigate and approach all things related to tech and mental health and bullying, et cetera. And then with the school, yeah, it's just going to depend on the state, on the school, on the district, on the principal even, on how to navigate. But yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky territory.
So what are some of those slights or paper cuts besides just being not tagged in a group?
Yeah, it's like subtle. So being unfollowed, unfriended, not tagged in a photo, subtle just jabs, just little comments that are not like viciously saying you should go kill yourself, but just like little punches, little jabs, right? And a lot of that kind of carries over to campus. And there's a whole bunch of categories. I mean, you know, we could look at, you know, whether you're being bullied based on race, but it's on body image, based on, you know, something else. We worked with a father recently and his daughter has epilepsy and she would walk into the classroom and all the kids would drop to the floor to mimic seizures and they would record it and then spread that. So it just, that would be on the vicious category. And then the even more vicious would be anonymous Snapchat apps where you don't know who's even saying the things. And that's when kids are completely opening up. So we're seeing a lot of interesting legislation being introduced or at least proposed right now that would put more restrictions. We'll see how long that takes and how effective they are, but it's a major issue with Snapchat anonymous apps and it gets messy.
So how should a parent or mom educate their kids about, like, you know, this, like, I guess, what would you call it? Like good habits, being a good neighbor, whatever you would say. But because some of this stuff is, I think the thing that's so hard about this online world is that it's so public and wide where all this exclusion with girls and cliques or boys or whatever is done all the time, but now it's done, you know, in front of lots of people. So how would you encourage a mom to educate their tweener teen about this?
Yeah, it's a lot of conversation. I think one thing it starts with is modeling good behavior. I think a lot of parents, there's a trend around TikTok over the holidays where moms, mostly moms, would publicly shame their daughters for their Christmas list, right? And thousands of cases of this publicly making fun of their elaborate Christmas list. So that's the extreme. Like, and if you did that, let's just assume that it was an innocent mistake, but that could have lasting impact. You're publicly showing. In less obvious cases, I think as a parent, you need to kind of be very careful with your words of how you talk about other parents in the community, how you talk about others. Your kids are absorbing, they're sponges, they're listening to how you process the world. And they're learning pulling from somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the conversation, yeah, there's a lot that could go on there. I think having that conversation of if you're ever bullied, it's never about you. It's always about something that's going on with the bully, right? It's something going on in their life and in their mental health and their dynamic. We don't know what it is. So try not to internalize it. That's really hard to do. Second would be, again, that open conversation of like, let's talk about those feelings. Let's talk about how that made you feel. But then third, like, kind of going back to, you know, it really starts with text message. How do we communicate? How do we interpret certain messages and kind of going through those examples? There's going to be some things that, you know, your daughter or son might interpret as bullying. Let's talk about it. Like, how did that make you feel? And let's kind of go through case by case. And then how can we also as digital citizens communicate to make sure that we're not being misinterpreted as we're sending signals out? Sort of related to bullying, but not necessarily. I think, and you reached this point earlier, is everything is permanent online. So being very careful about what you want your digital footprint to look like. And that's something that, you know, as kids get older, middle school, high school, they could start to wrap their head around, we feel, at least to some extent. And, you know, whether that's a photo, whether that's whatever it is, that's going to last a long time. And in some cases, forever. And outside of that, like, how do you want to be represented as a person? You have one personal brand and, you know, that could pivot, you could change and evolve that brand. But do you want to be the person that is doing these types of comments, that is putting this type of content out there or not, right? And so kind of educating on how that could carry with you and how that can impact your career and your education long term could go a long way. But at the end of the day, having the conversation, just hearing what's on their mind, asking more questions. I feel parents try to be the experts too much and say, here's what you need to do, here's what you need to look out for. And then they miss blind spots. So ask them, what are your concerns? What's on your mind? What are your fears with the world or with social media or with technology? And get them to open up.
Yeah. What I see a lot is like, it feels like these teens and tweens feel like they should be able to know how to navigate these situations. And so they don't talk to their parents about it. And they're way over their head, especially with sexting and threatening and send me pictures or I'm going to do this, and they get caught in this web. So how would you coach these moms, like, in terms of education about how these kids can protect themselves?
Yeah, you're right. Most kids feel they're invincible, right? And that they don't need any help. I think on one end there, what helps that we found is educating them on two things. One, the consequences of some of these things. So, you know, sexting or whatever it is. And, you know, where could that lead? Just so they're educated. But then two, you know, how to spot certain things. So some things are very obvious, right? You know, if you're seeing something inappropriate, but other things, you know, in terms of, you know, a deep fake news story, for example, or something like that, how to kind of thoughtfully be a little bit more prudent on what you're viewing, how you're interpreting it. Is it real? And not necessarily internalizing it. So I think some of those could go a long way. But yeah, like kind of talking about the concerns without, we're big fans of not being alarmist fear tactics, right? You know, we don't want to scare them and think that just because they're turning on internet connection, they're going to get abducted and sold into sexual slavery. That's just not the case, right? Yes, it could happen, but we don't want to lead by fear. At least that's Camplight's perspective. But I think educating on what some of the concerns are, what some of the warning signs are, what some flags are that you should look out for. If someone's asking you to send your bank account or to meet up with a complete stranger, those are some flags that you should be aware of. If you're not going to talk to a parent about it, you should at least be aware of it. So having that conversation, educating them on some things to look out for, hopefully could set them up for success.
Yeah. So I think what's tricky about this online bullying, especially the nuanced, subtle stuff, is that these teens and tweens don't think it's abusive. They don't think it's bullying. It's like they have a right to have their own group and they don't want this person in the group.
Well, yeah, I think it depends on how chronic it is. So if there's one case and someone's being excluded from a group, yeah, that's one thing. But if it's all of a sudden they're constantly being excluded and they're being kind of deliberately jabbed at and it's this culmination of a lot of different factors, then that adds up and that could really impact them. But yeah, if it's isolated, then sometimes that's a conversation too, I feel, with like, you're not going to be friends with everybody. You're not going to want everyone in your group and vice versa. And sometimes that's okay, right? And so just because one of those things happened doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the world. But as we start to see, you know, a culmination of these things happening, that's when it could start really impacting and breaking them down. But well, yeah, once you get into the more severe, clearly cyberbullying initiatives, if we're talking about, you know, some of the incognito rooms on Snap, that's when it's, you know, clearly treacherous, right? Or giving them, telling them to harm themselves, telling them that they're worthless. We don't want that. No parent ever wants that.
Yeah. So yeah, I can see with this exclusion of a group that that would be something that could be really helpful if you went to the school and had the school support, because that group probably all goes to the same school.
Yeah, but what's the school going to do about it?
Yeah. I mean, do any schools do anything about it?
About that in particular, it depends on the school. So like some very, very inclusive schools, depending on the size, you know, they might have a conversation. But in many cases, that particular example of I'm sort of being excluded from this group and it's just an exclusion thing, we haven't found too many schools that are involved. Now, if it's accompanied by something else, they're being excluded and they're being shamed for this one thing, or they're being excluded because of something else, then they'll get involved for some of those other reasons. But most schools that we found aren't going to be policing friendship groups.
So is there any upside with tech and any in terms of prevention or anything encouraging about the tech world?
Yeah, outside of bullying, but just in general, like,
well, yeah, just going back, because I don't want to end our podcast with this downer of bullying.
Yeah. That's one thing that I talk about personally a lot. Like, it's frustrating that, you know, there'll be one news story. Let's take AI, for example, right? And the case out of New Jersey, horrible, horrible case of these teens that used these girls' images. They combined it with porn and they created these AI porn simulations without their consent. Horrible, bad actors. That should never happen. That doesn't mean that all AI is bad. Not at all. Oh my goodness, there's AI that's saving lives. There's AI that's enhancing our day-to-day in such a profound way. Same thing with things like ChatGPT. Yes, ChatGPT could be used in a very bad way that prevents learning and development, but it could also be used in a very healthy way, fosters inspiration and increases efficiency. So it's never a blanket good or bad. Same thing with social media. There's some cases where social media is a net positive for even some younger children. It's not a blanket. This is always going to be bad. What we need is more education around how to use it in healthy ways and that community support to make sure that we're aligned and lockstep as parents of how we're going to go about this. So yeah, to answer your question, there's some great uses of tech and I would hope that parents would look out for those and educate themselves on how to implement those in their family.
So any last advice for the moms listening?
Yeah, I think another thing is, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. I think a lot of parents, they put a lot of stress on themselves to get it perfectly right. We're never going to get it perfectly right. We're human. We're parents. This is messy. It's tough. It's tough being a parent, and it's tough being a parent with technology and all of this uncharted territory. So be kind to yourself and, you know, do the best you can and, you know, lean on your community for support. I would say the other advice I'd have is have conversations with your peers and with your friends' parents. And we find the most successful communities are the ones that are at least talking. They might not necessarily agree, but they're at least talking. They're having these conversations of, well, what are your concerns? How should we navigate this? What are you doing? Just so they could be more aware. So talk, be open, create that environment for your child to be open as much as they can for a teen and try not to be so hard on yourself.
Yeah, good advice. So how can a mom contact you if they have, you know, any questions?
Sure. Yeah. Camplight.com. You could reach out to us. I'm not very social online, but you can find me on LinkedIn, Forrest Bronson. Happy to connect and answer any questions. And yeah, we'd welcome you in if I could ever add value to your world.
Well, thanks so much. This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting, Moms with Teens podcast. If this podcast has been helpful, I would absolutely love it if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. This makes it easier for other moms like you to find the support and encouragement they need. Also, my award-winning best-selling books, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, and my newest release book, Dial Up the Dream, Making Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. You can find both of these books wherever books are sold. And you can find other great resources and contact me at ColleenO'Grady.com. And that has 2 L's and 2 E's.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.